Hello, you're listening to Gossipint, the way to gossip intelligently. Gossipint is a podcast that helps listeners learn critical thinking concepts by applying them to well-known pop culture events, real-world technology-focused examples. Here with us today, we have Diane Duvielle, Karen Frost, Caitlin Hopkins, and I'm your host, Bobby Jade Apostolos. Details on our backgrounds in threat intelligence and cybersecurity can be found on the podcast bio. Although all participants today do work at Microsoft, the views expressed here belong to us alone and do not represent the views of Microsoft. Welcome to our creative and imaginative world of Gossipint.
Welcome back to another episode in which we discuss cognitive biases using tangible and relatable topics. I personally look forward to this podcast every single week with you ladies, and I have the pleasure of not only working with you, but I also get to know you. I wanted to take a moment today to reintroduce everyone to our listeners. Although you can reference the following on our podcast website at gossipintpodbean.com, I want to quickly go around the room and kind of delve in a little bit more into everyone's background. So I'm Bobby Jane, and I've been a cybersecurity professional for about 13 years. My background is started in sales, literally from the bottom. I was started in outside sales. I don't know if you guys know that, but door-to-door soliciting. So definitely a character builder and probably why I'm your host today. But I want to start with Karen. This podcast is your concept. So is it possible you could kind of tell us a little bit about your professional background and what ignited your interest in creating this podcast?
Sure. My background is in the analysis of geopolitics. In essence, what are foreign governments doing and why? I spent years writing papers about that, but I've always loved gossip and discussing it. At the same time, many of the people with whom I've tried to discuss it just aren't interested. As I said on our first podcast, there's a perception that gossip is a dirty intrusion into the lives of celebrities, and that reading gossip gets us dirty too. And of course, there's some truth to that in the sense that not all celebrities want their faces front and center of a tabloid. But what interests me is, of course, the more intellectual aspect of gossip. How are celebrities playing us? How are we, in essence, playing ourselves? There's a nexus here with my professional career, because aren't foreign leaders celebrities? When you work in fields like geopolitical analysis, critical thinking is important. Yet many times when we're discussing critical thinking concepts, it's in a very dry context, so it's hard for people to remember. But gossip is inherently memorable. It carries with it emotion. And for that reason, I've always found it a natural case study for teaching critical thinking. I wanted to create this podcast because, unlike TMZ or Perez Hilton or Dumois, we're not here for the salaciousness of gossip. We're here to teach and to learn.
And I absolutely love it. So thank you, Karen, for creating this podcast for us. Caitlin, tell me a little bit about your background and your interest in this podcast.
So I started out with a purely academic background, majoring in applied intelligence. Basically, learning about intelligence analysis across the domains of law enforcement, national security, and business. And part of that was learning how to apply some of the structured analytic techniques that we discuss here. But of course, in class, we're applying these techniques and critical thinking concepts, like Karen said, to geopolitics or other topics relevant to business or law enforcement. I love being involved in the Gossipin podcast because I never really took a step back to realize how transferable these skills that we're learning are into other industries and just life in general.
Absolutely. And lastly, Diana, you and I have worked together a bit, and you also have a very impressive background. Mind sharing a little bit with our listeners?
Sure. So prior to Microsoft, I was an analyst in the government for about 10 years, doing mostly geopolitical analysis, counterintelligence, and tradecraft. Working in tradecraft, I found a real passion for analytic thinking, and I had the opportunity to spend time exploring and learning more about the tools and techniques like we've been talking about here. And just like Caitlin and Karen, I love this podcast because I love how this kind of structured thinking can and should be a part of just our everyday life.
Fantastic. It's also impressive. Diana, last week you kicked us off on anchor bias, and I strongly suggest to any of our listeners to go check it out if you haven't. But this week we're diving into the halo effect. So tell us, what is the halo effect?
Absolutely, yes. Today we're discussing the cognitive bias called the halo effect. This refers to a tendency that we have to let our positive impression of someone influence how we assess their other traits. Put another way, we often attribute qualities to someone not based on any direct evidence, but on unrelated qualities. So, for example, people often unconsciously assume that someone who is attractive is also smart. That attractiveness casts a sort of halo so that people seeing it make positive assumptions about their related or even unrelated traits. While we all know it to be true that what is beautiful is not always good, our gut instinct or snap judgment often leads us to the opposite.
So, per the name, These are perceptions we develop instantly or quickly about someone in a positive way, positive thoughts we have towards them, but all prior to really getting to know them or having any evidence of that.
Basically, yes. The halo effect is a perception distortion that specifically affects how we interpret information about someone, and specifically those with whom we formed a positive relationship. So, for example, let's say you find out your friend used to be a drug dealer. Because you're friends, you'll likely find reasons to defend or excuse that past. Oh, maybe he needed the money, or he was immature, he didn't know better, he's reformed now. You make all of these excuses in a way that you wouldn't for a stranger.
Okay, the positive thoughts we can hold over time. So once we develop those positive thoughts towards someone, they can kind of stick around.
Exactly, or even for people we've never met. The halo effect also impacts immediate judgments. So what this means is that if there's ambiguous or missing information, we may make assessments about a person or things using whatever concrete information we have. So let's say you're babysitting two children whom you've never met before, and you discover that one of them has raided the cookie jar and eaten all the cookies. One child is hyperactive and the other's very calm. So while neither of these traits have any direct bearing on the identity of the thief, chances are you'll assume it's that hyperactive child who's causing problems with the cookies. This is the flip side of the halo effect. It's referred to as the horn effect, referencing devil horns.
Oh, okay. So there are layers here. Essentially, this bias has many impacts, but ultimately it's giving us a blind spot against this evidence.
That's one way to see it. Studies about the halo effect are both interesting and depressing, at least for someone who isn't drop dead gorgeous. A 1920 study by psychologist Edward Thorndike found that in the military, there was a correlation between a soldier's physique and perceived intelligence, leadership, and character. Put another way, a man with a handsome face and a strong body was assumed to be smart and of good moral character, even though we all know that these things are unrelated. This feeds into what's called the attractiveness stereotype. People unconsciously assume that physically attractive individuals are more likely to be healthy, successful, nice, and moral than their peers. Although, interestingly, they're also assumed to be less honest and more vain. In a 1974 study of judgments about intelligence and academic competence, researchers found that attractive people were given higher grades than unattractive people. I don't know about you, but that makes me feel like we should all wear bags over our heads in school so we aren't unfairly judged. Speaking of school, by the way, multiple studies have shown that the halo and horns effect affects teacher assessments of students. Teachers who know or believe a child has oppositional, defiant disorder, or is mentally retarded will have a negative bias against that child, while they'll interpret a well-behaved student as smart and diligent. And the same is true in a work setting. A boss with positive relations with a subordinate will rate that employee higher than their work would otherwise merit. That's good news for an employee benefiting from the halo effect, but bad news for the one stuck with the horns.
This also makes me think of when the media has that reaction of when good people do bad things. Like, it's so much more shocking when a horrible crime is committed by someone who is objectively attractive. We know attractiveness is subjective, like Ted Bundy comes to mind. I know tons of people have written about that phenomenon.
Exactly. As a final note for me about the halo effect, one of the things that really astounds me is how consistent it is, even when it makes no sense at all. Per author Malcolm Gladwell, 58% of CEOs at Fortune 500 companies are over 6 feet tall, even though in the US population, they're only about 15% of men. And while only about 4% of men are over 6'2", 30% of male CEOs are. Per another report, fewer than 3% of CEOs are under 5'7". And it's not just CEOs. Studies going back 100 years have shown that tall men are more likely to become bishops, sales managers, basically any position of authority. Why do people unconsciously assume that tall men make better leaders? Maybe it goes back to our caveman days and the need to kill woolly mammoths. But whatever the original cause, the effects still remain.
This is literally one reason why I don't bother trying to get into management. As a woman who's 5'2", there's absolutely no hope for me. At 2 inches under the national average for women, I'm likely to earn less over my lifetime, not only than a man, but probably many women in similar positions to mine as well.
Erin, I don't love you selling yourself short. And if there's ever been women who can blast through glass ceilings, it's these women right here on this podcast with me. And I'll just leave that there. Karen, you're taking us into my favorite topic, pop culture. I bet you were able to find a ton of examples.
Absolutely.
Just look at how celebrities are used to market products. What does the actress Keira Knightley have to do with perfume? Or the singer Janelle Monáe with cars? The answer is nothing, at least not directly. But we see them cast in commercials because the seller hopes that buyers will take their positive association with the celebrity and transfer it to the product. In fact, that's one reason why the character Flo from Progressive continues to be used, appearing in over 100 ads since the character was first introduced in 2008. Viewers develop a sort of warm, fuzzy relationship with her that's then carried over to future ads. The same transfer effect, by the way, can also be leveraged with stunt casting. Ever see a movie in which you don't recognize anyone in the cast but for that single A-lister? The filmmakers, who are operating on a low budget, hope that blowing a big chunk of their budget on that one A-lister will pay off, and the halo effect of that actor's reputation will reap financial rewards. 5 minutes of screen time for someone like Nicolas Cage doesn't change the plot or make the movie any more interesting than it naturally is, but his name in the credits and his face on the poster can really raise the movie's profile and tempt more people to watch.
That's totally true. I know there are certain actors whom I have never, nor will I ever meet, but who could do literally no wrong in my eyes, and I would see any movie they're in, good or bad. So that totally rings true for me.
I do feel the same way about Rebecca Ferguson, even knowing she can't quite do a good American accent. Anyway, researchers have found a direct correlation between the perception of attractiveness and friendliness and trustworthiness. What this means is that we unconsciously assume that beautiful people are kind. So when, for example, the actress Jennifer Garner tells us we should use the Capital One credit card, we can't help but believe her, because she looks so friendly. Surely she isn't just being paid to get us to apply for a high-interest credit card, right?
That's so wild that you use that example, because I actually had that same thought about that same person for that exact same commercial. She's so wholesome. I have to believe she's clearly done her due diligence before promoting Cap One, right? I seriously pondered that.
They really should call it the Glenda the Good Witch effect. Why would Dorothy have had any reason to trust a stranger in Oz? But Glenda was pretty and seemed nice, so Dorothy did. The halo effect can also act as a shield for the reputation of celebrities. For example, in February 2009, the singer Chris Brown beat then-girlfriend Rihanna so badly she had visible injuries to her face, arms, and chest, and required hospitalization. During the altercation, he choked her and threatened to kill her. When charged, he pled guilty to felony assault and accepted a plea deal. If Brown had been any less talented and less handsome, that would have been the end of his career. Immediately after the domestic violence incidents, he lost commercial contracts. He was dropped from most of his sponsors and excluded from talk show appearances. Radio stations even banned his music. But Brown already had number one singles, and his records had gone triple platinum. He was a cash cow for the music industry, and both the industry and listeners were willing to look the other way when it came to his domestic violence. Brown hired a crisis management team, and within a year, all was forgiven. His new songs were back to hitting the top 10, and his first album after the incident debuted at number one in the U.S. Brown received 6 nominations at the 2011 BET Awards, taking home 5, including Best Male R&B Artist, Viewer's Choice Award, and the Fandemonium Award. In 2012, he won the Grammy for Best R&B Album and performed several songs at the award show. Nowadays, his violent past is rarely mentioned.
I mean, that song was probably one of the catchiest songs ever. But of course, here we are, we've taken a much darker and a little bit uncomfortable turn. But yeah, I mean, R. Kelly, Kanye, they still have tons of fans.
It gets worse. The halo effect influences things we would hope it wouldn't. Judges, for example, are more lenient when sentencing attractive people than unattractive people. And a study of social workers found that most social workers find it difficult to consider a beautiful person guilty of a crime. This regularly plays into pop culture. Did anyone else watch The Tinder Swindler on Netflix? If you haven't, the whole point is that a guy catfished around $10 million out of women around Europe by pretending to be the son of an Israeli billionaire. But the crazy thing is that after the show came out and he was exposed around the world for who he was and the crimes he committed, women still flocked to him. Celebrity creates its own halo effect, even when that reputation is for doing something negative. And Tinder swindler Simone Leviève isn't the only one. An absolutely alarming number of serial killers or rapists end up marrying women while in jail. Danish citizen Peter Madsen, for example, is currently serving a life sentence for the murder of journalist Kim Wall in 2017. He invited her on his private submarine, killed her, and dismembered her body, then tried to sink the submarine to hide the evidence. When the police investigated him, they discovered he liked watching snuff films, which are clandestinely distributed videos of the actual murders of women, and clips of people being beheaded. Not exactly husband material, right? And yet in 2019, he got married from jail. Writing on Facebook about him, his new wife described him as the most beautiful, smart, talented, devoted, and empathetic person and man ever. The halo effect in action. And for anyone who wants more details about Wall's murder, the Danish documentary Into the Deep can be seen on Netflix, while the 6-part series The Investigation is on HBO.
So yes, we have definitely taken a darker turn. But I wanted to say, so recently I heard on one of my crime podcasts, the Chris Watts, the guy who murdered his entire family in Colorado, receives tons of love letters from women. Like, what? But now I see the bigger picture here in the halo effect. He's considered objectively attractive, but ladies, what is going on? And we regularly talk about Ted Bundy. Kind of the same thing happened with him, right?
Right. Women found Bundy to be charismatic and handsome, which made it much easier for him to commit his crimes because they lowered their guard around him. But even after he was caught, this physical halo effect persisted. Bundy married longtime girlfriend Carol Ann Boone while he was on trial for serial killing. And 2 years after he was first imprisoned and convicted, she gave birth to his daughter, Rose. Bundy and Boone divorced in 1986, but until the end, women were still attracted to him. Despite having confessed to killing 30 people, he had numerous girlfriends by male correspondence at the time of his execution and may have also been involved with a young Florida attorney. So very much like your Chris Watt example. The halo effect can also work retroactively to paint the deceased in a better light. Take singer Jerry Lee Lewis, who died in October 2022. Lewis was remembered in obituaries as a rock and roll icon, a musical genius who had a dozen gold records in rock and country, 4 Grammys, including a Lifetime Achievement Award, and 2 Hall of Fame Awards. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Country Music Hall of Fame, and once upon a time was on the path to eclipsing Elvis Presley. Rolling Stone has listed him as the 24th greatest artist of all time.
It seems that these good feelings that people develop towards someone can be for like a range of reasons. Like they can be attracted to someone physically or simply just inspired by them. We become completely blinded to the facts of who that person really is or their unsavory behavior.
Or forgive them their bad behavior. Lewis was no saint, and everyone admits it. When he was 22, he married his cousin Myra, who was only 13, after they started a sexual relationship when she was 12. Because this derailed his career for several years, it is mentioned in obituaries, which largely focus on that career. What is not mentioned by many obituaries, on the other hand, is that Lewis was accused by all of his wives of abuse and may have murdered one of them. In a 1984 article, Rolling Stone even outright accused him of murdering his fourth wife. So why did he get away with it then? And why isn't this a big deal now? As we saw from the Chris Brown example, a good musician can get away with a lot of sins.
Diana kind of mentioned something earlier, but this topic really should be stuff that makes people feel bad. Because my goodness, this is pretty depressing stuff.
Well, to prove the halo effect, we do have to show that the people wearing the halo aren't exactly angels. Which leads me to my final and absolutely worst pop culture example. Jimmy Savile. Sir James Wilson Vincent Savile, Order of the British Empire, was not a good-looking man. What he was, however, was a national fixture in the UK. He was a top DJ, a famous TV and radio personality who hosted BBC shows such as Top of the Pops and Jim'll Fix It. In his day, he was like a combination of Ellen DeGeneres and Make-A-Wish. Flamboyant yet ubiquitous, he was a philanthropist who worked extensively with children at schools and in hospitals. He even fundraised an estimated £40 million for charities and hospitals. On the face of it, he was a standout man who used his celebrity to help those who couldn't help themselves. A friend of British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, he rubbed shoulders with the British royal family and even acted as an unofficial advisor to then Prince Charles. But as we know, there are always more chapters in the novel. A year after his death, an explosive documentary was released with claims that Savile had engaged in the sexual abuse of minors. The media and law enforcement immediately jumped in to investigate, eventually discovering that Savile had been abusing children for over 50 years, with at least 450 alleged victims spanning from age 5 to 75. While Savile preferred young girls, he targeted boys as well. It was likely the worst instance of sexual abuse in UK history. How could it have gone on for so long without anyone noticing? Well, it didn't. Savile's interest in underage girls was a persistent rumor that followed him around his whole life. He was initially investigated for sexual assault in 1958, but police determined there was insufficient evidence to press charges. The press began to make oblique references to Savile's unsavory activities starting in at least 1973, although it never made any direct accusation. In a 1990 interview, a journalist for The Independent on Sunday asked Savile for the first time about rumors that he liked, quote, little girls. Later, in a 2000 documentary, the filmmaker asked Saville about speculation that he was a pedophile.
Netflix also released a documentary this year about him. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
I agree. And it's only a two-parter, so it's not super long. But Saville didn't completely escape the police's radar. Saville was interviewed by police in 2007 over an alleged indecent assault at the now-closed Duncroft-approved school for girls that occurred in the 1970s. And in 2008, The Sun linked him to child abuse at the Jersey Children's Home, Eau de la Garenne. And he was investigated by the States of Jersey police over an allegation of indecent assault at the home in the 70s. He was also interviewed by police in Surrey in 2009 about the Duncroft School. But the press and police weren't the only ones. After Saville's death, former colleagues said he was open about his interest in underage girls with them. In the 1960s, for example, when he was a DJ, it was an open secret in the record industry. The founder of Childline reported Saville had always been followed by rumors that he behaved inappropriately and sexually with children. The head of the BBC Radio 1 station, having heard about allegations against Saville, in 1973 asked the press whether it would print those accusations. The answer came back that it would not, because Saville was a very popular man who raised money for charity. Even his specific targets were known to some. Paul Gambaccini, who worked next to Saville's office at BBC Radio 1 from 1973, said it was well known that Saville targeted vulnerable children that were institutionalized or hospitalized.
Oh, that's so cringy. I know the documentary released this year covered all of this, how some people knew about him the whole time. Full cringe.
We're all cringing. The more the press dug on the issue, the more they found that Saville's behavior was well known to the people experiencing it, particularly at Stoke Mandeville Hospital, a hospital specializing in wheelchair-bound patients with spinal injuries, and where Saville volunteered as an orderly, many people knew he was a sexual predator. The problem was Saville was protected in part by the halo effect. For example, in the 1970s, a nurse at Stoke Mandeville reported Saville's abuse to a local detective inspector. The inspector repeatedly informed his superiors, but they didn't believe him. In 1994, two women came forward with credible and convincing allegations of abuse at a children's home, but the Sunday Mirror declined to publish the story out of fear the paper would be sued, and the jury, starstruck by Saville, would rule against it. How could this zany guy who rubbed shoulders with Princess Diana and did so much for the underprivileged be a dangerous sexual predator? One of the manifestations of the halo effect is that we're less likely to believe our friends are guilty of crimes. When the West Yorkshire Police investigated how Saville had been able to assault 68 victims in its jurisdiction alone, it found that there had been what it termed a, quote, over-reliance on personal friendships between Saville and West Yorkshire officers. In short, while they didn't actively protect him from investigation, they also didn't do enough to investigate him. Although, per that Netflix documentary, it sounds like Saville did actively groom those officers to protect him and discredit accusations against him.
In addition to that, in addition to friends, I assume that we would see this when it comes to parents too. Parents can't believe that their own children could do something horrible. It seems to make you so blind to seeing the truth.
Yes. Even after Saville's crimes were exposed following his death, many of his friends and acquaintances were shocked, remembering him as a clumsy yet nice man who kept his private life intensely guarded. A lesson here is that perhaps we shouldn't always rush to defend our friends. As much as we want to come to their defense, we should listen with an open mind to the evidence if an accusation is made against them and, when the situation offers it, look for patterns. If your friend has been accused multiple times of rape, for example, it's time to start wondering if all that smoke comes from a fire.
Absolutely. I hear this a lot on the crime podcasts I listen to. People are blind in the moment when red flags and bad behavior are present or even obvious. It's only after the fact, when presented with that clear and convincing evidence, can friends and family see the signs in hindsight.
Saville's ability to molest and rape people uncontested for decades isn't just because of the halo effect. There were other factors at play. He bribed some people to look the other way, for example. And in some places, there was a culture of fear about speaking up, for example, at the BBC, that acted as a damper on any whistleblowing. Still, it's easy to see how he benefited from the halo effect. Who would ever suspect that the man fundraising and working to help disabled children was, in fact, a monster who was using that as a cover to assault them? We're primed to believe that people doing good are, in fact, doing good, that people who are funny and glib are harmless. There's a reason the documentary about Saville on Netflix is subtitled A British Horror Story. It very much is. But if there's a silver lining, it's that as a result of Saville's horrific crimes, people will look much closer at individuals with unfettered access to vulnerable individuals, and there will be a greater willingness to listen to whistleblowers. What Saville was able to get away with on a breathtaking scale between 1955 and 2009 can't happen again. At least, I hope so.
Well, thank you, Karen, again, with the straight-to-the-gut examples. If you see something, say something, people, and please try to be aware of this particular bias in your life. So Caitlin, you are discussing our tech topic today, maybe something a little bit more uplifting?
Yeah, I guess I could go a little bit more uplifting, but everything that Karen was talking about earlier also makes me think about a couple of US examples, like the Steelers quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, how he was accused and actually settled a couple suits about sexually assaulting women back in like 2009, 2011. Still, he retired this year and he's still being praised for his football prowess. People still aren't taking that stuff seriously and ignoring that halo, I guess. But I can start us out with a few lighter examples of halo bias in tech, but no promises about not moving into something a little darker later. As Karen said, celebrity marketing is used constantly to create a positive association with products and brands, and the tech industry is absolutely no exception. To be honest, some of the examples are also quite funny. I mean, Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart getting together to do a T-Mobile Super Bowl ad will forever be iconic. Or even the Amazon commercial where Alexa loses her voice. That single commercial used actress Rebel Wilson, singer Cardi B, chef Gordon Ramsay, and actor Anthony Hopkins. And heck, even Microsoft has used celebrities like Jerry Seinfeld, Matthew Perry, and Jennifer Aniston to promote the company and its products. But of course, halo bias isn't just used by tech companies in TV marketing. There are plenty of other ways that companies leverage pre-existing positive ideas, associations, and feelings to their advantage. These positive experiences and the halo effect they create unconsciously cause customers to develop brand loyalty. Basically, customers develop the mindset that if the company is good at one thing, they will continue to be good at that thing and other things. There are a few companies that are absolute masters at fostering brand loyalty and using halo bias, but I like using Apple as an example.
Oh, yes. There are diehard Apple fans out there.
Yeah. In 2005, Apple developed the iPod. Although it wasn't the first or cheapest MP3 player, it was the cheapest product Apple had made to date, finally giving the company that mass market reach that its previous Macintosh computers just did not have. But the positive experience users had with the product, for example, automatic syncing, the concept of shuffling music, and the sleek look of the device, were where Apple had a slam dunk. People loved the iPod so much that they then purchased the much more expensive Macintosh computer, practically doubling laptop sales than the previous year, at a time when sales in the rest of the industry were declining.
Anyone remember how heavy those first iPods were? I came across one the other day and I was like, my goodness, this thing's a beast. But I didn't realize the impact that iPods had on the future of Apple. It's pretty interesting, but it makes sense.
Yeah, many business case studies have argued that Apple is successful not just because its products are good, but because it has been wildly successful at creating customer brand loyalty. We all know someone who is a diehard Apple person. They have a MacBook, always the newest version of the iPhone, an Apple Watch, and AirPods. It's not because Apple just happens to make the best computer, smartphone, smartwatch, and earbuds. It's because the brand loyalty caused by the halo.
And Apple quickly tied all their products together, making it easy for users to adopt all their devices and have interoperability. I know they were considered the safest from a cybersecurity perspective too. I'm sure that all added to the good feeling towards Apple.
Oh, for sure. And you know, we all experience the impact of halo biases in our life, whether we realize it or not. Unfortunately, that bias can be exploited by cyber threat actors. Just think about it. When a hacker is crafting a phishing email, they're trying to exploit the positive impression and trust you have in whatever company or individual they're pretending to be. That's why phishing attacks impersonate recognizable companies with relatively good reputations, like Verizon, Chase Bank, or Apple. In a spear phishing campaign, which is a targeted attack against you personally, using things like your interests and hobbies, might exploit the trust you have in something like your local yoga studio, your child's school, or even your friends. And by the way, as we talk about the cyber world, just as in the real world, halo bias can take the form of us trusting a beautiful person. The same is true for things like websites and apps. When users like the aesthetics of the user interface, they tend to rate the service as more intuitive, reliable, and even more secure. People extrapolate from their positive experience with the design to form expectations of the product and service as a whole, despite having no direct information about those attributes. The lesson here is that if you're going to have a company website, it's worth the money to pay a professional to build it and to build a polished, sophisticated page.
Oh, absolutely. Look at marketing in general, labels. Companies know we buy based on the look and feel of labels, what we're attracted to. Yeah, full circle.
Right. And lastly, I want to touch on something we've briefly discussed in an earlier episode, the tech industry, and how it's still so male dominated.
Okay, so how does the halo effect impact that?
I'm not saying that the halo effect is the sole reason that the tech industry continues to be male dominated. I'm not even really saying that it's half the reason, but it's certainly a contributing factor. For one, recruiters and hiring managers, which in the tech industry tend to be male, generally lean toward people who are similar to them. Once a hiring manager develops a positive affinity for a specific candidate, they may continue searching for more reasons to like the candidate, even those that do not have anything to do with the job itself. What this means is that a male recruiter who went to an Ivy League school is more likely to unconsciously prefer another man who went to an Ivy League school and feel a stronger sense of disparity with a woman who went to a state university.
And something you said earlier, I bet we could even delve into Elizabeth Holmes. She was sentenced to 11 years in prison. But does anyone else find it ironic that the topic was halo effect today? But due to the actual nature of the topic, we ended up discussing all this negative behavior. I find that kind of interesting.
I mean, that's the point, right? The halo effect is about people not being as angelic as they seem. If you want positive stories, then we would have to give examples of the horn effect. Then you would hear about people everyone assumed were bad rescuing babies from burning buildings. And by the way, for anyone wondering what the counter to halo bias is, like many biases, it's taking time to understand an issue. Don't rush to judgment when considering an issue. And for situations like hiring, create a rubric of criteria so that candidates can be evaluated against objective measures rather than by subjective things like gut instinct.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, ladies, for joining our podcast today. And thank you for joining us as we discuss the halo effect. Next, our topic is recency bias. I actually looked this one up and I'm excited to see the examples that you ladies bring. Thank you for listening and catch us next time for another episode of Gossip Int.